Welcome back to Coffee and Capitalism Radio, heard on the Crude Life Media Network. My name is Jason Spies, and I'll be your host today. In our next segment, On the Farm, we talk with Roger Johnson, the president of the National Farmers Union.
Roger Johnson, president of the National Farmers Union.
So the first question I have for you is, what is the current status on hemp cultivation or farming in the United States?
Well, it's still illegal in terms of federal law, but there are some 28 states that have some form of hemp laws on the books. I mean, back when I was ag commissioner in North Dakota, I think majority leader Dave Munson was sort of the leader of this effort, and I think there were probably 5 or 6 or 7 different pieces of hemp legislation that were passed in North Dakota, and we did everything we could to implement them, including even coming out to a meeting in D.C., a meeting with the DEA, trying to make the case that they needed to co-sign a license that I had issued to 2 hemp farmers that were licensed pursuant to North Dakota statute. We never heard from DEA, and so those licenses remained invalid because they required a co-signature. But that sort of, so North Dakota's kind of been at the forefront of a lot of the industrial hemp efforts for many, many years, but it is now the case that many other states have passed hemp legislation, and for the first time, we actually have majority leader in the Senate, in the U.S. Senate, Mitch McConnell, who has become an advocate for industrial hemp. And so we're beginning to see some movement in terms of allowing for research and those kinds of things in the industrial hemp realm. But until the federal government passes the law saying, you know, this is not a, I forget what it is, Schedule C substance or whatever that schedule is, you are always going to be constrained in terms of our ability to grow it in any significant quantities.
In North Dakota, your former state that you were ag commissioner of, I spoke to Doug Goring recently, and he mentioned there was a 2014 something in Congress that passed that allowed farmers to do some sort of advisory, supervisory type hemp fields. And I guess we have 5 or 6 fields in North Dakota, and that transitioned into the hemp market, whether it be hemp seed oil or the fabric. Well, what type of market do you see for hemp farmers in the future?
Well, there is a fairly substantial market. It is predominantly driven by a fairly large company in California that imports all of their hemp product, both the fiber and the seed. And predominantly, it's imported from Canada, where growing industrial hemp has been legal for a long time. I mean, that was part of the reason that North Dakota was so aggressive back in the late 90s in passing this legislation, because Dave Munson farmed up pretty close to the Canadian border. This was at a time when wheat scab became a real, real serious issue, and hundreds of thousands of acres of wheat were lost and were basically burned instead of harvested because of wheat scab. And there was an awful lot of interest in finding good rotational crops, and hemp was one of those. I mean, it's a crop that very aggressively grows. It doesn't require pesticides in any significant degree because it outcompetes weeds. It generally doesn't require additional fertilizer. At least that was always the argument that was used then. And so it's a relatively low-cost crop, and it's not prone to some of the diseases that were plaguing, in particular, the cereal crops back then. So that was a large part of the impetus for it, I think it was important because, in many ways, North Dakota has always been sort of the leader in terms of trying to get state legislation to permit the growing of industrial hemp.
How about when it comes to the manufacturing of it? Does the United States have a textile plant or any sort of manufacturing plant for the fiber, or is that something that farmers would have to export?
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, it may be that there is some ability to turn the fiber into fabrics in particular in some small ways in the U.S., but there's no major ability to do it. I think much of that is done, sort of raw material is produced in other countries, and then it's brought in and turned into clothing and, you know, other uses for the fiber.
How about from your members? Are you hearing pros or cons or anything about your farmer union members?
You know, we've had strong pro-industrial hemp policy on the books in Farmers Union for many, many years. Before I got here, I've been here for 7 years. It was a part of the national policy. It remains part of the national policy. You still have folks who occasionally talk about it's not a major crop yet because it's, you know, you can't plant it, but there's interest in it, and there's hope that at some point the federal government will simply say, you know what, at least industrial hemp is a crop that ought to be permitted to be grown like any other crop, and it shouldn't have any restrictions because it is not, I mean, it doesn't have, by definition, it has less than 0.03% THC, which is the hallucinogenic drug that the marijuana industry is after. It doesn't have that. And realistically, you couldn't, you know, some of the early arguments against industrial hemp is that, well, marijuana growers are going to want to plant their marijuana out in the middle of an industrial hemp field. And the fact of the matter is that it'd be probably the worst place in the world you could plant marijuana because those two plants would cross, and what you'd end up with is very rotten marijuana. I mean, it would end up with lower levels of THC because the industrial hemp has extraordinarily low levels, and so you'd end up with something that would largely be worthless. Besides which, the plants look so dramatically different. It's almost like the difference between wheat and flax out in the field. Industrial hemp tends to grow very tall. It doesn't have robust leaves. Marijuana is the opposite. It tends to be more like a bush. And so, I mean, it would be instantly available, even flying over at relatively high altitudes that you had it there. So, you know, that's where we need to get to the point where the federal government simply says, you know what, enough of this. We ought to just deregulate it entirely.
To listen to the full-length interview with Roger Johnson, president of the National Farmers Union, or to listen to other on-the-farm features, visit cafecapitalism.com. That's cafecapitalism.com. My name is Jason Spies, and this is Coffee and Capitalism Radio, heard on the Crude Life Media Network.
The Real American Jam, a concert benefiting the fallen soldiers of North Dakota, July 15th, 16th, and 17th, Buffalo Gap Guest Ranch west of Medora. Joe Diffie, Corb Lund, Ned Ledoux, Bart Crow, and more will be performing. Tickets available now at realamericanjam.com. Camping's available. Call to reserve a spot, 701-623-4200. The Real American Jam, for the fallen soldiers of North Dakota, July 15th through the 17th, Buffalo Gap Guest Ranch. realamericanjam.com and buffalogapguestranch.com has complete details.
The 4th Annual Bach and Barbecue is happening June 17th at 4 p.m. at the West River Ice Center in Dickinson, North Dakota. Live music from the Blue Ribbon Band, beverages from Armies West, and brisket, chicken, ribs, and much, much more vying for this year's Bakken Barbecue Trophy. The cost is $15 a person, kids 10 and under for free, and all the proceeds go to benefit Make-A-Wish North Dakota. That's the 4th Annual Bakken Barbecue, happening June 17th at 4 p.m. at the West River Ice Center in Dickinson, North Dakota. That's the 4th Annual Bakken Barbecue.
My name is Otis, and I am the host of the Kids in Capitalism KidCast. Let me tell you about one of our sponsors. Catch Realty is in the business of helping people. They just happen to sell real estate. Call Eric Hatch or anyone on the Hatch Realty team with any real estate question. They want to be a resource and connection for you. That's Hatch Realty, 701-212-1572. That's 701-212-1572. Hatch Realty in the business of helping people. They just happen to sell real estate. Hatch Realty, Telemotus sent you.
Hey folks, I'm multimedia journalist Jason Spies and the host of Building the Bakken Radio and Coffee and Capitalism. Traveling across the Rocky Mountain region and the upper Midwest has introduced me to many new people, landed me in exciting places, and created lifelong connections. And there's one place I want to tell you about today, and that's the Lodge at Deadwood. It is without a doubt my favorite place to stay in the Black Hills. In fact, not only is it my favorite, it's pretty much everybody else's. They're a three-time recipient of the best hotel, best casino, and best overall restaurant in the Black Hills. So if you're planning a conference, maybe a weekend getaway, a wedding, whatever it might be, I truly invite you to check out the Lodge at Deadwood and find out why they're consistently voted the best hotel, the best casino, and the best restaurant. Now listen, if I didn't believe that the Lodge at Deadwood was the best place to stay in the Black Hills, I wouldn't be doing this testimonial across our media network, which spans 5 states and 30 plus radio stations. And I feel very confident when I say the Lodge at Deadwood will exceed all your expectations. Check them out online today at deadwoodlodge.com. That's deadwoodlodge.com.
I'm co-sponsoring legislation with Senator John Thune of South Dakota that helps make sure that our Native American veterans have access to health care services by partnering the VA with Indian Health Services and making sure that our veterans' costs are covered so they don't have those out-of-pocket expenses.